Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we love you so much here. Like we said in the first hour, we do this not just for you. We do love you. We don't love you quite as much as ourselves. We almost do, but we do this for ourselves and our families first and foremost. You know, charity starts in the home. But I hope y'all enjoyed that first hour. We had Sister Nancy on, and she had a ton of information. We had Brother Rand, the Alabama Wrong Wolf, on. And like we said, I'll sign off on the first hour by saying this. We can give you tons and tons and tons of information. There's enough information out there to fill a stadium with books. But if we don't act on that information, it's worthless. It's useless. But anyway, we're bringing on another guy who I've been knowing all my life. I trust him with my life. I love him to death. I loved his family to death. I can't tell you how many meals I ate at his house when I was a kid. And his name is C.W. And he really is a brilliant man. He's one of the smartest people I've ever known. And he's rock solid. He's one of us. He's honest. He will not lie. He will not steal. He will not cheat. And the guy's just brilliant. And anyway, with that, he's going to tell you about, I'll let C.W. Tell you what he's going to talk about. He's been working on this project for quite some time. But anyway, C.W., how you doing tonight, brother?
Well, I was doing pretty good until you came up with all those compliments. So I'm trying to recover from that. But I'm doing good, Eddie. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good for an old geezer. Went and did a little old run today. You know, my life revolves around running. And I'll tell people, if you want to find out what the difference is between a 75 and a 25, just start running with these people, and you'll find out right quick-like. But anyway.
That's right, man.
But my blood work was pretty good, as CW can attest to. CW, you've been on the show before. They know you, and you have some big fans here in this show with people that love you. In fact, one of the number one guys that's been looking forward to having you come back on is Frank White. That's not his name, but we have a lot of people come on this show to support this show, and for reasons that are, you know, perfectly obvious, they can't use their names if they want to have a job, if they want to have a house that's not burned down. Frank Hawaii. So, Frank Hawaii, I know you've been really, really looking forward to bringing CW in. So with that, I'm going to shut the hell up. CW is going to tell us what we're going to be talking about. I kind of told him a little bit about something about the COVID. But anyway, CW, do your thing, my intelligent brother.
Okay, Ed. Well, I appreciate the intro, and hello to Frank. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus again today. In my opinion, this is a huge story that continues to travel on through time, but we're going to go back in time a little bit today and look at a paper that was published in The Lancet. Actually, it's a letter in, I believe it was February of 2020. Now, to give you a timeline on this thing, some of you may have forgotten, but the coronavirus, or COVID as it's called, first appeared in late December 2019 in Wuhan, China. And this article was published just about 6 or 8 weeks later, so to speak. But there's competing theories as to where the virus came from, and the main theory that's put forth by the scientific community is it came from nature. And what that means is the virus evolved naturally through animals and then spread to humans. Another theory, and one that other scientists adhere to, is the lab theory. And what this means is that the virus was created in a lab and then got loose from the lab and caused the problem. So, it makes a big difference as to which is the answer, because if it came from a lab, then that means it was made by humans, and you have to go back and see what they were doing and why they were making this virus, and somebody might be held accountable. So it would be nice for those people involved if it came from nature. Anyway, the theory of the so-called mainstream is that the virus originated in what's called a wet market over in Wuhan. Now, a wet market is not a supermarket with showers, contrary to what it may sound like. It's actually a seafood, a market where you get meat, and the Chinese are notorious for having an appetite for anything. So there's many different species there, and the theory is that the virus was in one of those species and it was able to infect a customer. But that's not actually been proven yet. Now, prior to this outbreak, we had two other outbreaks of the coronavirus. The first one we call SARS-1. That stands for Serious Adult Respiratory Syndrome, and that occurred in China in about 2002. And after that, there was another one less serious in Saudi Arabia called MERS, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, and that was in 2012, and that one got into humans from camels. The lab was doing research on coronaviruses there in Wuhan. This was a well-known fact. And as a matter of fact, the head researcher was called the Bat Lady. I believe her name is Xing Zili or something of that nature. The gain of function is where the laboratory is trying to make a virus that's more contagious or more deadly. And, of course, there's some criticism of this work. As a matter of fact, it was made illegal to do gain-of-function research in the United States in about 2016 or thereabouts. And so it looks like that the Wuhan Institute kind of started carrying the ball after that to some extent. But there was collaboration between the Wuhan lab and other labs around the world, and interestingly, the United States was contributing to this. There was money going into the Wuhan lab from the CDC and other agencies here in the United States, and we can get into that a little bit later, how that worked. But so there were multiple parties involved. So I'm going to start out by just reading this paper, and this is very short. It only takes about a minute to read. And this is from The Lancet, a very prestigious medical journal. Okay, so this is 27 virologists signing off on this paper, and they say, we are public health scientists who have closely followed the emergence of the novel coronavirus disease and are deeply concerned about its impact on global health and well-being. We have watched as the scientists, public health professionals, and medical professionals of China have worked diligently and effectively to rapidly identify the pathogen behind this outbreak, put in place significant measures to reduce its impact, and share their results transparently with the global health community. We signed this statement in solidarity with all scientists and health professionals in China who continue to save lives and protect health during the challenge of this outbreak. We are all in this together. I think I've heard that before somewhere. And then they say the rapid, open, and transparent sharing of data on this outbreak is now being threatened by rumors and misinformation around its origins. We stand together to strongly condemn conspiracy theories suggesting that the COVID-19 does not have a natural origin. Scientists from multiple countries have published and analyzed the genomes, that's the genetic structure of the virus, and they overwhelmingly conclude that this coronavirus originated in wildlife, as have so many other pathogens. This is further supported by a letter from the presidents of the U.S. National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, and by the scientific communities they represent. Conspiracy theories do nothing but create fear, rumors, and prejudice that jeopardize our global collaboration in the fight against this virus. We support the call from the Director General of the World Health Organization to promote scientific evidence and unity over misinformation and conjecture. We want you, the science and health professionals of China, to know that we stand with you in your fight against this virus. The last sentence says, we speak in one voice, we declare no competing interest. Now, that last statement, we declare no competing interest, that's important because what that means is they do not have any personal interest in the outcome of where the virus originated. So that'll become apparent later on in this as to why that's important. But first off, I want to go through the article briefly. The first sentence or two is basically virtue signaling. It's saying, hey, we're the good guys. We're deeply concerned about you and your health, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go on to praise the scientists in China, the ones at the lab and the ones who are trying to contain the outbreak. And then they call for unity. We're all in this together. And then they go on to condemn conspiracy theories. Now, what is a conspiracy theory? Well, what a conspiracy is a secret plan, and this comes from the dictionary, made by two or more people to do something harmful or illegal. Okay, that's a conspiracy, but they're talking about a conspiracy theory. That's an it's an explanation for an event or situation that invokes conspiracy by sinister and powerful groups, often political in motivation, when other explanations are more probable. The term has a negative connotation, implying the appeal to conspiracy is based on prejudice or insufficient evidence. A conspiracy theory is not the same as a conspiracy. Instead, it refers to a hypothesized conspiracy with specific characteristics such as an opposition to the mainstream consensus among those people, such as scientists or historians, who are qualified to evaluate its accuracy. So these are the scientists who are qualified to evaluate its accuracy, and they said it didn't come from the lab, it came from nature. Now, you might ask, well, what's the evidence of that? And the answer is they don't have any. When I first heard about this, the first thing that came to my mind...
CW, we have to go to our first break.
Okay, okay.
Don't lose that thought. CW's getting into the meat of this letter. We'll be right back with CW in just a minute.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, God bless you, Blood River Radio family, for hanging on. We got a really an expert here. He knows us what he speaks, and he's going to go back, and he's going to kind of expose these 27 precious virologists that, from the Lancet. We know the Lancet. We know anybody goes to Oxford or Yale or any of those places like that. We know that they're the cream of the crop, and they would never lie. But anyway, we'll go right back to CW. He's going to take up where he left off. Go ahead, CW.
Okay, well, we were talking about the fact that if you question whether the virus came from a lab, you were a conspiracy theorist. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to say, well, gosh, there's a lab there in Wuhan, and it's doing experiments on bat coronaviruses. And some of these experiments involve gain of function, and I don't remember if I said what that was earlier, but that's where you make a virus more contagious.
Yes, you did.
Deadly. Okay. So it wouldn't be unreasonable if a virus popped up literally right down the street to say, well, maybe it came out of that lab. But apparently that's a conspiracy theory to these folks. So to me, it seems like the most logical line of inquiry if you wanted to figure out where this thing came from. So anyway, there was some blowback to this. I don't want to imply that all of the virologists were in on this. There were a bunch of them that signed this document. I think that they were probably in the majority. But anyway, here's some comments that people made that kind of tell you what the opposite opinion was. One journalist said that this affected reporting on the origins of the virus, characterizing the lab leak theory as unworthy of serious consideration. In other words, it suppressed proper scientific inquiry. And if we want to know what that's about arriving at what the truth is. It's not about suppressing a theory. Another one stated that the letter's conclusion was premature, saying that some scientists close ranks fearing for their careers and grants. Well, I think that's probably true. I mean, money's got a lot to do with a lot of things, and they were getting grants, so that might have been a motivation. And another one called it scientific propaganda and thuggery. Someone wrote to the Lancet editor, Richard Horton, to flag a conflict of interest, but received no response. Chief editor of the Lancet, and I think that they had some responsibility in this too, and this is what the chief editor of the Lancet said, that we trust the authors to be honest with us, and the authors trust us to deal with their work. Well, that's not exactly what an editor's supposed to do. He's not supposed to trust the officers. He's supposed to look at their work and see if it's worthy of being published in a eminent medical journal. So that's a bunch of baloney. Another one said it had a chilling effect on scientific research and the scientific community by implying that scientists who bring up the lab leak theory are doing the work of conspiracy theorists. So there were people who were pushing back against this idea, and some of them were virologists. One of the most notable ones was a professor from Rutgers, Richard L. Ebright, noted that the conflicts of interest involving virologists denying that the pandemic would have come from the laboratory were unprecedented. So what are those conflicts of interest? Let's look into that a little bit. And really, this conspiracy theory kind of suppressed debate for really until last year, around the fall in September or thereabouts. So it had its intended effect of making people not look at alternative explanations. Then a paper appeared out of the Telegraph and the Daily Mail in the UK, in England, and Their headline was that 26 out of the 27 Lancet scientists who trashed the theory that COVID leaked from a Chinese lab have links to Wuhan researchers. So that would be a conflict of interest and a competing interest right there. And they go through and talk about some of these, and I'm going to point out some of the main actors in this melodrama. I'd say the number one actor here and the star of the show is Dr. Peter Daszak. He graduated from London, and he's the president of an outfit called Eco Health Alliance in New York. And he's kind of instrumental in funneling money from the CDC to the Wuhan lab. He's well paid for that, and they gave him a boost in salary last year, I think. And he's the one that went to the Lancet with this paper, and he kind of rounded up the other virologists and got them to sign on to it. So he apparently had a conflict of interest, which I don't think he noted right off the bat. Somebody pointed this out later, and the Lancet had to amend this. But he's one of the main actors in it. And the next guy is this guy's big too, Dr. Jeremy Farrar. It's actually Sir Jeremy Farrar. He's from England. He's in London, and his main job now is besides being on a number of government boards, is the president of the Wellcome Trust. Now that's a big money outfit involved in quote unquote philanthropy, and They got a trust fund of about $25 billion, so he's got a purse with a lot of coins in it, and pretty big guy over there. And he had a relationship with a gentleman named George Gao, who also signed this document. He's the head of the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and he described as an old friend. He's also had connections to Xi Zingli, the scientist who's known as the Batwoman. And I believe the Wellcome Trust may have been involved in getting some money over Wuhan's way, but I'm not really sure about that. But he's a main one. And then we move down to Professor Linda Safe, microbiology expert in university, Ohio State University. She spoke at a workshop in Wuhan in May 2017, along with Dr. Xi and Dr. Gao, and talked about biosecurity at the lab. So she was there in the lab. And when you go speak at these events, I usually pay for your airfare and your accommodations and your food, and usually give you a stipend, which is money. So she had a conflict of interest. In fact, everybody I'm naming had a conflict of interest. Then there's a Professor Sabaro from the University of Melbourne. He spoke at a conference there. And he is the chief of the U.S.-based National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, so a pretty big dude. Then there's another gentleman, Professor Ralph Barrett. Now, this guy did not sign the document, so he's clean on that. But he was contacted by Dr. Tasek to try to gain support, and there were some emails that were released that indicated they were, I won't say colluding, but trying to keep a low profile. But he did not sign. Dr. Barrett didn't. He is an important guy because he's at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and they've received a lot of grants from the CDC to do research on different aspects of this whole process. I believe that he's the one who discovered, and this is a really big discovery, how to put human ACE receptors in lungs of mice. And this is a key strategy for promoting these viruses. So that technology was developed in North Carolina and ended up in the Wuhan lab. But he did not sign the document, so I want to give him a clean bill of health on that. Then we got Professor Peter Police, a microbiology expert from the Icahn School of Medicine in New York. Now, he reversed his position after this got going, and he changed his mind, and kudos to him for that. He said, a lot of disturbing information has surfaced since the Lancet letter I signed, so I want to see answers covering all questions. So good on that guy. All right, Dr. Perlman, he did soften his position later, and he said it's difficult to eliminate a possible lab leak as part of the process, so this still needs to be considered. So what we've got here is these guys were all in at first on the conspiracy theory, but now they've changed their tune because there was a backlash against them. So they're trying to back away from this really, really hard position that the thing only could come from nature and it couldn't come out of the lab. Next, we go to Professor Charles Kalischer, a microbiology expert at Colorado State University. And he made a statement that I'm having a hard time understanding, but anyway, what he said wasn't true. But he did sign the thing, and he's sticking with his decision to sign it. Professor Roizman at the University of Chicago, he told the Wall Street Journal, since signing the letter, he has become convinced that the deadly virus was released by a sloppy scientist. So that's not exactly, he's become a conspiracy theorist now. He's reversed his position to condemning conspiracy theorists, and now he's one himself because they told us early on that if you suggested that it didn't come from nature, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, with SCW, we have to go to another break, and we'll be right back, people, after this. You hang on to your seats. This heavy scientific stuff, after a while, may ask a few questions if I can think of any. Be right back, folks.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
A rogue pilot in Mississippi landing in a field and into charges of grand larceny and making terroristic threats. The pilot has been identified as Corey Wayne Patterson, an employee of Tupelo Aviation. Officials say he did not have a license to fly, though he did have some flight instruction. He circled the skies of northern Mississippi for several hours, threatening to crash his plane into a Walmart at one point. Patterson could also face federal charges. NASA scrubbed the launch of its crew capsule into lunar orbit Saturday due to a fuel leak, the second time in a week that they canceled the launch. It was a scratch on Monday when they discovered escaping hydrogen. No word on when NASA might try again. Repairs could possibly bump the launch until October. For the first time since the pandemic began, Jehovah's Witnesses are once again doing their door-to-door ministry. Practitioners call it a crucial part of their faith. This is USA Radio News.
This is an important notice to consumers facing $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or other unsecured debt. You're not required to pay it all back because there are special programs now in effect that will significantly reduce the amount you will owe if you qualify. This is not bankruptcy or a debt consolidation loan. These programs, which the credit card companies like to keep secret, exist to aid American consumers struggling with overwhelming credit card debt by offering tremendous savings and real debt relief. Accredited Debt Relief has established a special hotline for you to call and learn what savings you qualify for. They've helped qualify consumers with over $1 billion in debt and are A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau. So don't wait. Get the relief you need during these hard economic times. For this free information, call the Accredited Debt Relief Hotline now. Call 800-950-0099. 800-950-0099. That's 800-950-0099.
The Houston Texans begin their season in a couple of weeks at home against the Indianapolis Colts. When that happens, the school shooting in Uvalde will be heavy on their hearts.
The team announcing Friday that they will be sporting an Uvalde Strong helmet sticker when they take on the Colts. Earlier this week, the Texans traveled to Uvalde to visit with high school football players. They're gifting the team new uniforms, thanks to Nike. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev was laid to rest on Saturday. His reforms have been credited for ending the Cold War. He also precipitated the breakup of the Soviet Union, which he called the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. Notably absent from the funeral, Russian President Vladimir Putin. He claimed that he was too busy to attend. Gorbachev died on Tuesday at the age of 91. Online at usaradio.com. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Whoa, dear Blood River Radio audience, I hope you're trying to pay attention to some of this, because it's really strictly scientific. This isn't a bull crap. This isn't a show where I'm saying we're Bob Adair saying, I think this and I think that, I got me 2 years in education. This guy knows what the hell he's talking about. And I hope I don't interfere with him, his narrative, but I'm just going to ask him. He brought up this, I think he said her name was Chi Zin Lee, the Batwoman. And
yes.
He also talked about the allergies. This dude who was specializes, he's probably a PhD in allergy and infectious diseases. I was going to ask CW, was there any link between Chi Zin Lee, the Batwoman, and Dr. Fauci? And was Fauci supposedly specializing in allergy and infectious diseases? That may be off track, I don't know, but that just kind of pricked my curiosity.
Well, Fauci is the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. That's where you're getting that.
Okay.
Now, he does have connections with Xi. I'm sure, more than likely they've communicated before. I don't have any direct evidence of that. Somebody subpoenaed Fauci's phone conversations and emails, and what they got was pieces of paper with black lines everywhere. So it's hard to, really dig into that too much. So I really can't answer that question, with any degree of knowledge, but I'm assuming that, they probably had some kind of interaction. But Fauci did a lot of his interactions through intermediaries like this Dasix, so that kept him pretty clean. But anyway, I'm going to go back and we're going to finish this call out of the virologist. And this guy that I'm fixing to mention now, he did not sign this document, so he's clean on that. But he's a really vocal critic of gain-of-function research. He doesn't like anybody investigating it. He's also called out the conspiracy theorist for suggesting this virus came from a lab. And I want to read a little bit about him because he has a special place among these virologists. His name is Dr. Peter Hotez. He's a fierce critic, and I'm reading from a document here, of the ongoing congressional probe into gain-of-function. He's been outed, which means exposed, as both a funder of such research and, in conjunction with the Wuhan lab, as a project leader for it. So he's up to his eyeballs in that. He's the dean at the National School of Medicine at Baylor College in Houston. He worked with Dr. Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. And get this is the punchline here. His project, that is what he did his research on, was premised in part on the possibility of an accidental release from a laboratory or a deliberate spreading of the virus by a bioterrorist with the goal of developing a vaccine for it. So, you know, here he's calling it a conspiracy theory, and that's exactly what he did his research on. So I guess some people would call him a hypocrite, but I'm not going to do that. And he's been working on the vaccine and looking at the spike protein. And he said, our objective is to develop highly effective and safe vaccine that can be used in humans for the prevention of outbreaks. He's violently dismissed the idea of a lab accident or deliberate spread, even though that's what he did his research premised on. So he's a special dude, and I wanted to give him special credit, as he deserves special credit. Okay.
We'll investigate him further someday.
No, I'm thinking I'm through with that guy. anyway, we're gonna go on now to some expert testimony on where the virus actually came from. So these were from witnesses called up in front of the House Oversight Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis hearing held in June of 21. We've got two eminently qualified scientists. One of them's a physician. I don't know about the other one. He might be. He's a professor of physics at the University of California. So a couple of high-powered intellects here. And the reason that they came to the conclusion that the virus came from a lab, and I'll try to make this as simple as I possibly can. You have to go a little bit deep into the weeds to get this stuff out, but anyway, we'll give it a go. And for those people that don't really understand anything about viral genetics, I apologize in advance, and I'll try to keep it as simple as I can. But they said that the virus started at the wet market. Well, if that were the case, you would expect to find samples of the virus and specimens from there or in people who had been in the wet market. They took a lot of blood samples, and the way this works is they can do a genetic sequence on the virus as time goes by. It's kind of like tracking an animal as he walks through the snow. He leaves one print, and then he leaves another one, and another one further down, et cetera. So you can kind of age all this stuff by these genetic sequences and how much they change over time. But bottom line is they sampled 450 animals from the market. They all were negative for COVID. They sampled another 600 from suppliers to the market, negative. They sampled wild animals from China, 2,000 of them more or less. They were negative as well. So there's no evidence of this virus being in any animal other than humans. If it had spread from animals to humans, which
that's
is
huge.
What the virologists were saying, you would have found that. Okay. And they also tested 80,000 samples from over 200 species of animals, but they did not find one single case where the virus was in there. So one doctor said the probability of this is 1 in 1,000,000. So very low odds that this was due to chance alone. He says this is what you would expect for a lab-acquired infection. It would just escape from the lab fully developed. It wouldn't have to go through an evolutionary process in animals. There were no blood there were no cases of COVID were detected in blood samples prior to December the 30th, which is when the thing emerged. And again, they got blood from people that had been in the hospital in the months previous to this outbreak, and they found zero samples that would confirm that there was a virus out there working in the population. So he says the probability of that's also about one in a million. And also in the other cases that I mentioned of SARS and MERS, the earlier coronavirus, there were genetic samples that indicated that these had been in animals, and all of the genetic samples taken over in China came from humans. So there's no animal host found anywhere. And the people that say that the virus came from nature, they admit this. They admit they don't have one shred of evidence to support their theory, which is that it came from nature, but they still adhere to that explanation, which is completely unscientific. He says that the probability of this is tossing a coin 250 times and getting heads every single time. So that's very, very unlikely. And this is another big one. This is really huge. Is there's a protein on the surface of the spike, on the surface of the virus. It's called a furin cleavage site. And what this is, this does not appear anywhere in any other coronavirus except this one. So this one is totally, completely unique. And the Wuhan lab was known for inserting these furin cleavage sites. And what it does is it makes the virus, makes it easier for the virus to get inside human cells. So it's a gain of function technology that they've been using over there, and there's a genetic sequence in there which involves a couple of amino acids. I won't get into that except to say that it does not occur in nature, but it does occur in this virus. So the other thing that they point to is the fact that the virus, when it first hit the ground, it was immediately optimized for human infection. It just hit the ground running. It was deadly right off the bat. And what this means is that somebody had prepped the virus to where it would infect humans for maximum effect. And the way they do this quickly is called serial passage. And you take these mice that have the human receptor put in them, like Dr. Barrick invented at the University of North Carolina, and then you infect these mice with a virus. And you just constantly select the sickest mice until you finally get the most infectious agent. So that's kind of the evidence that supports the fact that this thing came from the lab and not from nature. So it looks like these virologists were all wrong. And not only that, but I don't know whether I mentioned this or not, but the original document was signed by 26 of them, and 27, and of the 27, 26 of them fibbed. They lied. They said they did not have a competing interest, but they were found out to have competing interest. They had some kind of connection to the Wuhan lab. Either they lecture there or they've been involved in a company that gave them money, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's pretty dirty.
That is
huge.
That's
about what I've got, Eddie. I'll bring you up to date. There's been a little more progress on looking into the other alternative, origins.
Well, I got 1,000 questions. We'll come back to this. I can't believe this is our last break. The hours just rapidly flying by. People, we'll be right back after this break. I've got a few questions for our scientists here. So hang on to your seat, and we'll try to get it where you can understand it. Be right back.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. Freedomfactor.org.
Oh, God bless you, Blood River Radio family. This is I'll tell you, this has been, I love this. It's a lot of it's over my head. I'm sure a lot of it's over your head. But you know what? If we're going to get to the truth and we're going to get around the he said, she said of the common lay people like me, if in order to get to the real hard truth, I hope I'm playing. We have to get into the scientific, a lot of people might say a mumbo jumbo, but this is straight up scientific proof that we've been giving you thanks to our scientists here. And as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of the things he's saying has also been mentioned in RFK's book, the real Dr. Fauci. I hadn't read, but only a fraction of it. But some of the stuff jumped out. For instance, this ferret cleated site in these viruses, if I'm pronouncing that right. And like CW said, it's the only time in history that this type of site has been isolated in a coronavirus. Now I've got two questions I'm going to ask our fellow. First of all, the so-called coronavirus is supposed to be so deadly, COVID-19, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's supposed to be a corona-type virus. I know they have going back eons ago when I was in my little penny ante college, you know, science courses, they have what they call, a rhinovirus. If I remember right, rhinoviruses are a type of viruses that are responsible for just the common cold. Is that right, CW? Or do you remember that?
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of viruses, is my understanding, that can cause the common cold. Now, actually, coronavirus is one of them. It used to be that this was no big deal, that, you know, you got a cold with it. But since humans have been fiddling around with it and trying to make it more dangerous, and the reason they selected it was because of its spike protein, which what that is where the virus hooks onto the cell. And it's like a volleyball with spikes sticking out all over it. And that's how it got the name coronavirus. They got it because it looks like a crown that you would see at a coronation, where you put the crown on the king's head. So somebody came up with that description of it years ago. But yeah, it's been around really forever. And humans have fiddled with it. And now they've got something more deadly going on.
So what our experts just said, this coronavirus, like I had suspected, me being the gigantic brain with my 92 IQ, you know, the coronavirus, like the so-called rhinoviruses, have been around, I guess, ever since they've been humans, but they haven't been deadly like that. This is a huge point, y'all. And I don't know if we were on the break, if we were talking with CW during the break, or if I said it while he was on the air. I asked the expert, when was the first human that they know of? Can they trace it back to the first humans that they know of that had this so-called gain-of-function bug? The gain-of-function with a bug with a cleated site on, in the cell structure. And he said, yes, there were three scientists that became sick at the Wuhan lab. And they went home. And had to go home sick. And so if that's the very first case in history that they know of, that any human could be proven having this thing for the first time, then that to me, correct me if I'm wrong, my simple brain, that alone would be lead pipe proof evidence, indisputable evidence, that damn bug came from that virus lab. Am I right or wrong?
Well, Eddie, they never admitted that the workers that went home had the virus. They just said they got sick. They didn't say they got sick with coronavirus, so you can't really pin it there. But the way you get back to the origin of it is by looking at these genetic structures. And the way it works is the virus is mutating or changing. And what this means is it'll add on another genetic building block here or there as time goes by. This is common with all viruses, and it's the way that the virus optimizes itself to infect people. So by following these genetic sequences, they can trace it back to the earliest form, and that's some of the evidence I was mentioning a while ago about the origin theory. So that's kind of the way that works. These genetic tests are extremely sophisticated, extremely accurate, and they've got it automated. So, you know, they can do, I don't know, hundreds a day, maybe thousands. I don't really know, but a lot.
I got you. Going back, I'm trying to figure out which question to ask right now. Going back to these people, CW, that originally denied that the virus came from a lab that had to come from nature. They swore they had no conflict of interest, and you've just given evidence, irrefutable evidence, that they did, in fact, have conflicts in interest. Now, you may or may not know this. Were some of these conflicts in interest similar to Dr. Fauci's, that Dr. Fauci is well known to be affiliated with certain pharmaceutical companies that produce vaccines, for so-called vaccines? We've since been told that these vaccines are absolutely worthless. Well, as a matter of fact,
the vaccines is another massive part of this story, and it's really a lot more complicated and intricate and with a lot more information dense than what we just talked about. I've just selected one little incident. This whole coronavirus thing is just all over the place as far as, you know, what happened goes. And what I'm talking about in these virologists, normally, you know, their conflict of interest would be they worked with someone and got a salary from someone that gave the Wuhan Institute money, or they were there as a speaker, or they collaborated with them on this, that, or the other. So I'm not really aware of, you know, them working for some pharmaceutical companies, getting money from pharmaceutical companies. But that's kind of the way that works. But I did want to bring up one point some observations about what all this means. And basically, the people who signed off on this document, they actually, it looks like they were involved in a conspiracy. And how could 26 of the 27 not know that they had some kind of competing interest? I mean, if you look at this logically, either the memory is really, really bad in virologists, or they've got some kind of brain disease that affects their ability to recall things, or maybe they all colluded and decided that that's what they would do. I mean, that's just, you know, trying to narrow it down a little bit as to why they would all do this. But, of course, you know, the logical answer is they didn't want to get called out for having a conflict of interest, I suppose. But, you know, the troubling thing about all this is that this was a blatant attempt at censorship of really scientists. And science is about getting the truth, and this whole episode was about preventing the truth from coming out. So that's kind of scary. The other thing is that the arrogance of these people is amazing. You know, to think that they could get away with this is incredible. And it also strikes me that it's a statement on the sorry state of academia in America. You know, when we've got all of these people, professors at these universities, and I doubt seriously if any one of them is going to be terminated because of this. They'll probably keep their jobs. Nothing will happen. And the other thing I wanted to mention is the use of conspiracy theory as a brainwashing technique.
Bingo.
All they had to do was bring out the conspiracy theory label, and that shut everybody down for a year and a half.
Yes.
So this, in my mind, this is a way that people who want to hide things, they'll say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. And everybody in our society has been programmed to say, oh, I'm not, I don't want anything to do with that. I can't tell you how many times I've listened to somebody give a talk or something, and the first thing out of their mouth is, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. Then they'll say, but, and they'll go ahead to describe one. So, you know, it's just insane, really, in a way. But I want everybody to understand that just because somebody calls something a conspiracy theory, that's no reason to stop thinking about it. In fact, you may want to look at that even further. And my last comment I'll make is I just became aware of the fact that the United Nations is in on the conspiracy theory bandwagon now, and they want to warn everybody that don't believe the conspiracy theories about the global elites trying to take over the world. So, and as a matter of fact,
sure,
they give advice for dealing with people that say that, and they also want all journalists to turn over anybody that says this to social media, which I thought was weird. What's the United Nations got to do with social media in the United States? You know, that's kind of scary. That's kind of scary when the United Nations logs in and tries to prevent, you know, Americans from exercising their First Amendment rights.
You know, CW, to kind of change gears, but not to change gears, I should have brought this up earlier to maybe someone talking another time to see about, you know, how effective this so-called coronavirus vaccine is. It's, from my information, it's been a total miserable failure. It hasn't protected anybody from anything. Matter of fact, I know people, we have a co-host, one of our dear brothers on this radio show. He's the only person in his family that did not, this is an anecdotal evidence, he did not get the jab or any of the boosters. His wife, his daughter, his son got the jab, got the boosters. Some of them, they didn't want to, but, you know, they had to do it for their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Well, all four of them got the bug. Our co-host, Gene Andrews, as a matter of fact, he got it last, even though he was the only one that did not get vaccinated. He had a lighter case. All the rest of them, fully vaccinated, fully boosted, up to the max, they got it. And I hearken back to something you told me, too. We're about to run out of time, but I'm always going to ask you to advise people, you know, if you have any evidence on this vaccine. But you said something, too, that was just really, really was huge to me. Back during World War I, when they had this great outbreak of the Spanish-American flu, well, I didn't know that the people wore masks in those days, but CW told me that they found out, and correct me if I'm wrong, CW, that they were getting sick. Most of the people were getting sick and that died from this so-called Spanish flu, they were getting sick from the bacteria that was growing from the inside the mask that they were wearing the mask so long. And CW also told me that they're finding particles, mask material particles in the lungs of people nowadays here now at this day and time. Is that right, CW?
Yeah, some of the people have found plastic fibers. If the mask has, you know, plastic in it, you're breathing through this, and some of those fibers are getting into your lung. They've done cultures of the mask, and they're growing out a lot of pathogens. So yeah, there's some problems there.
CW, I don't know if you can hear the music or not, but we have run completely out of time. We got to get you back on again, and we got to start delving into the so-called vaccines. And we'll get some statistics on whether or not they are effective, or they're just actually what a lot of people suspect, that they're a tool, a genocidal tool put out by the so-called globalists in the United Nations that CW mentioned. CW, thank you so much, my brother, for coming on. I love you to death. I'll be talking to you soon. Thank you for everything you've done. I know you did a lot of research there, and really love the work you've done, and we appreciate that. And thank you, dear Blood River Radio audience, for coming on. I hope you enjoy this heavy, heavy science, but you need to hear that. And thank you, Cameron. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. God bless you.